Welcome to the PA Podcast Series 2. I'm Olivia Coventry, one of the two co-founders of Oriel Partners, a boutique PA and administrative recruitment consultancy based in central London. The business was launched in 2018 with the aim to provide the highest quality of service to both our clients and candidates, following three main values: honest, kind, and fun. Providing an honest and transparent service to our clients, to be kind and helpful to our candidates, and to have fun in the office in a supported working environment. Part of the reason for launching our business was to inspire others, and hence this PA podcast has been launched. This series, I will be interviewing a number of clients across a variety of sectors to provide current industry knowledge, understand what they look for when recruiting, and discuss the skills required to be successful in their roles. Today I'm joined by Savinda Robinson-Sandhu, who is the Director of Operations at Avamore Capital. Avamore Capital are a financial services firm providing bridging and development loans. So Savinda, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to chat.
Good. I think we've got a lot to cover. So maybe we could start with your career, because I know you've been at Avamore now for almost 6 years, but you did a lot before that. So could you tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, definitely. So like you said, I joined Avamore 6 years ago, and I actually worked with the company through an agency capacity when they first started. And I, at that time, was in a small marketing agency, decided that wasn't for me, did something else. And in that time, I'd always kept Avamore in my mind, in the sense it just struck me as a business that I actually really wanted to work for. And I really enjoyed the collaboration that I had at the time with the principals at work there. So sometimes these things have quite a funny way of lining up. So the job that I had, I didn't love it and was looking elsewhere. And then at the time, Michael, the co-founder, contacted me and said, "We're looking to take our marketing in-house. Would you like to do it?" So, of course, I jumped at the opportunity. I said absolutely yes. And at that time, the business was only 7 people. And I think at that point, it'd probably been going for about 2 or 3 years.
Okay, it's quite new.
Yeah, exactly. So really exciting, because actually they'd been using an agency, but I think when you're that small, you probably don't get what you need to out of a marketing agency. You really do need someone in-house to kind of elevate your brand. So I kind of went in and approached it as very blank canvas. And that was really exciting because I kind of had in my head already where I could make impact. But when I arrived, very, very quickly, I noticed that in a small business, there is so much more that you can do other than the job that you're actually assigned to do. So operations was one area that I thought, you know what, there's actually a real opportunity here mm-hmm. to kind of grow myself and actually really add value to the company. When companies are generally a bit smaller, I think operations tends to be not classed as a priority, probably a bit of a luxury. Mm-hmm. And so that was great for me because I was already there and I started to just put my hand up and say, can I get involved in this? Can I get involved in that? And actually just really moving it forward. So over the years, my role changed from being marketing coordinator to then marketing manager, then head of operations and marketing, and then most recently, director of operations. So it's been, when you look back, it's been quite the journey. But yeah, I've loved it.
And how big is the company now?
So we are about 27 people now.
Gosh,
so
a
yeah,
lot.
Bit of a difference.
Do you prefer having a more streamlined role?
Yes, definitely. I think when I kind of discovered operations, in my mind, I enjoyed marketing. Marketing is hugely important for an organisation, particularly for a growing one. But I never really felt like a true marketeer deep down. It was one of those things that you kind of fall into when you're, you know, just starting out your career. And, you know, I could write reasonably well, tell if something looked good or looked bad. And that's kind of how I ended up there. But when I kind of discovered this other world of, you know, making a company tick and run, that for me was like, this is really exciting. This is actually what I'm meant to be doing. And so now that I'm purely operational, I love it.
You found your feet.
Exactly.
And just going back to the beginning of your career, you went to university mm-hmm. and then you started in banking. Is that right?
So I I graduated from university, didn't know what I wanted to do. I spent a short amount of time with a startup marketing agency, mm-hmm. which was where I met Avonmore. But it was very much startup. There were two of us. It wasn't a kind of long-term career option. And so I kind of needed to move on to something that felt like a bit more of a, you know, substantial move. Mm-hmm. And so then I joined Silicon Valley Bank, where I was for just short of a year.
Okay. Brilliant. And tell me about the structure of admin support within Avonmore.
So we don't have masses of admin support. We have one EA that supports all of the directors. Mm-hmm. But actually, it's something that we should consider bringing more of in. I think sometimes admin support can be undervalued. And actually, if you can take your people that are kind of doing the bits that drive the business forward and remove all of the admin from them because you've got support in, actually that's a huge operational efficiency gain.
They can then focus on what they need to.
Exactly. And, you know, that's not to say that the person coming and doing the admin isn't important. They're actually super critical to the whole function of the business, because mm-hmm. actually, if you can say to, for example, for us, an underwriter, don't worry about any of the chasing, I'm going to do that for you, that means that they can literally sit there, focus on the analysis and the review of a transaction, and it means we can process a lot quicker. It means that we can, you know, improve our customer experience. And so having good admin support in place is hugely valuable.
Great. And what do you feel is different about the roles in financial services versus other industry sectors?
So I think that financial services probably still has a bit of a reputation of being quite quite straight, naturally very corporate, which can feel
intimidating.
Yeah, exactly. And it can feel like a barrier as well. Mm. You can think, oh, it's not for me. I think there's much more of a tendency to go in and feel that people know more than you, people are more intelligent because it's quite technical. And often it was like when I joined Avonmore, actually, even though I'd worked with them a bit before, I didn't truly understand what they did. Mm-hmm. So I felt a bit false going in and, you know, kind of blagging it a little bit. And that can feel like a bit of a blocker because it's less known. You know, if you go into a bit of a more of a B2C business, you can put yourself in the...
Understand the product.
Yeah, you can put yourself in the shoes of the customer.
Absolutely.
And it can be relatable. But financial services, whilst there's possibly more to learn, actually that kind of air of, you know, a bit of grey, a bit of mystery, a bit of inaccessibility, I don't think it exists as much as it used to. I think the corporate world, there is still some very traditional organisations where, you know, there is this real hierarchical structure and you think, oh God, I could never speak to the CEO. But I think that kind of business is really, you know, kind of on its way out. Certainly from Avonmore's perspective, culture is very important. You know, we want to create an environment in which people want to thrive and want to be there. And I think there are more and more businesses that are considered to be corporate that are acknowledging that and are aware of that and doing the work behind it to kind of drop their barriers and attract the best talent. Because actually now, if you don't have a good culture, if you do have this facade of being quite, you know, hard and difficult, I don't think you do get the best candidates.
Absolutely not. And it is interesting, the junior candidates that we meet often do want to focus more on the creative sectors than the professional services because of, I think, mm-hmm. probably the reputation or the barriers that you mention. But actually, working in professional services generally, the salaries tend to be higher. Mm-hmm. Potentially, there could be more progression. Mm-hmm. I certainly think there's lots of opportunities to learn. Mm-hmm. So I think it's something that's definitely worthwhile considering and looking into. Mm-hmm. What about your hiring process? What do you look for when interviewing and what would stand out on CVs, for example?
So I oversee all of the hiring processes in Avonmore, and that goes across every department. I think when you get lots of CVs in, it can feel quite overwhelming and you get fatigued like very, very quickly. And so what I very much appreciate is when we work with a partner like Oriel, they draft a summary for the candidate. And that's hugely valuable because actually they've taken the time to really understand what we want. They've screened the candidates and they've pulled out the key facts and headlines. So for me, when, you know, you're on your job search and if you're speaking to a recruitment agency, actually looking at the job spec and really pulling out the bits that you know are relevant mm-hmm. is super important so that they can kind of sell you in the best light possible. Mm-hmm. When we recruit candidates across all departments, there's a very similar hiring process. Generally, we have three rounds. Your first is on Teams, is normally with the manager. The second, you'll come into the office and meet probably the CEO or the chief lending officer or myself or the director of credit. And then you'll also do a test, which I think is incredibly important to show your competency. I think people can often talk around a subject, people can present very well. However, that kind of written mm-hmm. word is super important, because actually, if you can't come in and, you know, draft a letter, then we're in trouble.
And is it the same test no matter what role you're going for, or do you alter it?
No, we alter it per department. With, for example, the one of the roles that we're recruiting for at the moment is marketing. So an example of the test is I've created a product, asked the candidate to come up with a creative campaign idea for that product, do a graphic for it and do a little kind of headline press release for it. So we make it very relevant to what would the day-to-day role would actually look like.
Interesting. And there's no real right or wrong with something like that. It's just how they would express themselves and the creativity behind it. Mm-hmm. So, do you like it when people come up with quite wild ideas, or do you like them to keep it quite traditional?
No, in this role, I like the wilder the better.
Okay.
And actually, it goes back to your point about kind of corporate culture and financial services. For me, there's so much opportunity in the corporate world because people are quite afraid to, you know, go outside the lines.
Do something different.
Yeah, but it's kind of like, well, you're not going to stand out if you do something different. And of course, there is a, you know, there's a bit of a limit. But for me, if I had somebody come in, and we actually had two candidates that were very different, and one did feel like they were going outside the box, and the other one was, you know, I looked at it and I thought, yeah, that kind of makes sense. But it was a very kind of safe, reasonable bet. And, you know, we're not going for safe. We want to stand out. We want to make an impression. So yeah, I think always go in that scenario, always go with your gut and what you feel and your instinct, rather than trying to second guess what the reviewer actually wants.
Fine. And testing is always something that people are quite daunted by mm-hmm. and don't like doing. It's fascinating, actually, the number of candidates we have who get to test stage mm-hmm. and then who'll decide not to proceed when we present them with the test, which I think says a lot.
Yeah.
So I always think you should give testing a good go, take them really seriously. Mm-hmm. From a candidate's perspective, because I think that the employer does really use that as a way of filtering out a good from an average candidate.
Yeah.
It's interesting to know that you do a mixture of video interviewing and face-to-face mm-hmm. interviewing, because I think the skills for both are quite different.
Yeah.
And I'm often surprised myself, meeting people via video and then meeting them face-to-face, actually how sometimes they're a lot more impressive in person, or perhaps mm-hmm. the other way around. Mm-hmm. But so much communication is non-verbal, and I think when you're doing video calls, a lot of that can be missed. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we would always encourage candidates to go into an office and see the environment they're going to be working in, and meet the people, because I think that will tell them a huge amount. So it's always a two-way process, these interviews, for the candidate to love mm-hmm. the client and buy in, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So any specific tips for candidates when they're doing their interviews, be it video or face-to-face, anything you particularly like?
I think I agree with what you're saying, actually, about the difference with video and face-to-face. We generally use video on kind of round one because it's just more efficient. You know,
good way to filter.
Yeah, it's a half an hour interview. You kind of crack through them, and that's why we use it. I think when someone comes in face-to-face, what's really impressive is when they've gone the extra mile. So, for example, we've had candidates research the company and perhaps do a presentation beyond the test, which they know is coming, but they don't know what the content is. They'll come in and present and talk about, you know, the impact they'd make with marketing, and you know that they have really considered what we as a business do, but also by them taking the time to actually do some extra work means that they're really serious. Mm. Means that, you know, they actually want to work with your company. They don't just want a job, they want a job with you. And that's super, super important. I think at the other end of the spectrum, one of the things that have been happening at the moment, because perhaps it's really competitive, is that candidates are coming to us directly either before or after the interview. So we'll be working with a recruiter recruitment partner who, you know, we trust wholeheartedly. That's why we're working with them. And candidates will perhaps try to bypass, maybe because they think the recruiter won't put them in the best light possible. But actually, if you're working with someone really closely and they know your business inside out, they know as well as you do whether they're right or wrong. And so I would say that's kind of steps over a line in which you think, I'm not sure you're kind of respecting the order of
the professional
things.
Relationship.
Exactly.
Interesting. So you're saying that so the candidate will have heard about the position, mm-hmm. and will have gone onto LinkedIn or found your personal contact mm-hmm. details and got in touch
exactly.
directly.
Yeah.
So sometimes we have cases where candidates want to send a thank you note mm-hmm. after the interview mm-hmm. To thank you for your time. Do you like that? Or do you only like that if it goes via the agency?
I think coming via the agency is definitely right, unless you've explicitly said, please contact me directly.
Yeah.
I do. Maybe I'm a bit cynical, but I do think that in some instances, I don't know whether candidates think, I'm being extra polite and therefore it will change the decision. Mm. It just won't. By
of
that
course,
point,
yeah.
you know. And I don't know, you know, you kind of meet them and you say, thank you very much for your time. Mm-hmm. It was really nice to meet you. So I think the follow-up email
is unnecessary.
A little bit like, oh, I'm not sure.
And we as an agency will always give our candidates as much information about the client that they're interviewing for or that we are wanting to put them forward for.
Yeah.
So that would be name and all the details mm-hmm. because the trust, we hope, is there and that the candidates then won't go and contact directly.
Yeah.
Because as you said, that's ultimately why the company is using the agency, is to save them time, just to see the right kind of people. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that, because it does happen occasionally and it is mm-hmm. sometimes disappointing when that happens. So it's good to hear your thoughts on it. So then tell us about the onboarding process. So once someone gets an offer and joins mm-hmm. your business, what should they expect?
So onboarding is something that is really important to me, because I think as much as, you know, a candidate wants to come in and impress, a business has a responsibility to actually make those first 3 to 6 months really smooth and really enjoyable for that person. Because if you've got good talent, you want to keep them there, make them feel included, make them feel part of it.
And give them the tools to succeed.
Exactly. And I think that when we were a bit smaller, we used to have this kind of, you know, sink or swim attitude, where you kind of just, you turn up and you just do it.
Hope for the best.
Exactly. And I think, you know, when you're small, that's fine. And not that we're massive now, but as you get bigger and you start to professionalise, you have to realise that different people come from different backgrounds, different people deal with joining a new business in a different way. And just because, you know, if you think you would thrive in that environment, doesn't mean that someone else would.
And they're all coming with different skills and experiences.
Exactly. So onboarding is super important. So what we tend to do is there'll always be a kind of onboarding pack. So we tend to give that high level overview of what the business does, to my point from earlier, to break down that barrier of, I'm coming into a really kind of corporate environment, it's financial services, I don't quite understand the terminology. It takes away almost the embarrassment of asking what a technical term means. Like, mm-hmm. we've given all of the headline information, so you can always like use it as a bit of a cheat sheet. Mm-hmm. We always make sure that the candidate meets all of the team and spends time with all of the team. So if, for example, someone comes in to sales, you know, they'll have time with myself, the marketing manager, the underwriters, the asset managers, the directors. We try to make it very kind of inclusive and, you know, from the outset show that there aren't barriers, there's no hierarchy, everyone's kind of here to work together and we appreciate every single person. We do also try and set some goals from the outset. So that is to make sure that people feel like they're progressing, but it's also good for the company to see, you know, if something very simple with sales, it was, you know, you have to have made 100 calls by the time we reach your 3 month probation mark. That's actually very measurable. Mm-hmm. And you know whether that person is willing to pick up the phone and make those 100 calls. So ensuring that they've kind of got goals and focus is super important. And then finally, we'd make sure that we do really good training. To the point earlier, you know, you can't expect to just throw people in and hope for the best, because you very rarely get the best. we want to set them up to succeed, and therefore everybody around the business really gives up their time to help with the training. Any areas of kind of weakness that are spotted, we then look to develop those in particular. So for example, if you're an underwriter but you're not very strong at presenting in credit meetings, we'll focus on the presenting part. The underwriting part, that's fine, but it's about building someone's confidence up and making sure that when they go into that environment that they perhaps feel intimidated by, we've done everything we can to make sure that they've got the tools necessary to supported.
Kind of,
exactly.
The first part of any new role is always the most rocky. Mm-hmm. It's the time when, if a candidate is going to fall out of the position, that's when it happens. And when you've put so much time and money and effort into the interview process and onboarding someone, it's always so disappointing. So I think the more thorough and structured and supported that first few weeks, months can be, then you are setting people up for success. So it's great to hear that you do that.
Yeah.
And with regards kind of success stories, you yourself, Subinda, are one, having started from a marketing coordinator and now you're at director level. But do you have any other examples of assistants and what they've gone on to do?
I think actually the whole of kind of the Avonmore management team can be considered a success story. So a lot of us started in very junior level positions, doing different kind of bits across the business, and we all very quickly accelerated our career paths and now, you know, head up teams and take much more responsibility. I think that's really the beauty of joining a small company early on in your career, is that really the world is your oyster. You get from it what you put in, and if you put everything in, you will be rewarded for that, both in kind of in title, in money, in progression. And so I would really encourage people that are kind of considering between big and small, you know, maybe I'm biased because I've worked in both and I love small, really didn't like big. You are just in charge of your destiny so much more in a small organisation, and that's proven through myself, but also a lot of my peers and my colleagues, because it's happened time and time again in each department where people have shown their strengths, that's been rewarded and recognised, and that's how they grow up through the company.
And in a smaller firm, you generally get exposure to those senior management team much more than you would in a big corporate.
Yeah.
And often, as you mentioned right at the start of this recording, the roles are much more broad and varied.
Yeah.
And so actually it can be a really good way to look at other areas of the business that might work for you that perhaps you hadn't considered initially. So I think there are lots of opportunities, especially if the business grows naturally, then they're looking to hire, and you can almost mould your role to your strengths and to what you enjoy, and then go down that route. Interesting. Okay, so advice for someone starting their career and wanting to go up the assistant route, what would you say?
I would say going down the assistant route is, first of all, a great job when you're starting out and you maybe aren't quite sure of what you want to do. I did some time over a summer, I think, when I was at university, where I was a PA in an office for 3 months. And it was great, and it gave me massive exposure to what working life and corporate life was like. I think I remember my the person I was reporting into even taught me little things like, take your cup at the end of the day, which didn't even cross
in the dishwasher.
It didn't even cross my mind at the age of 18.
What I loved about Sabinda's LinkedIn is that she still has on there her I imagine part-time role at Clark's. She did when she was younger, and also when she was at university she was the social chair, and I loved seeing that. Something obviously you're still really proud of. But I think just shows extra strings to your bow. And when all the junior candidates, if you kind of graduate, let's say there are lots of people who will graduate the same year that you do, and you need to stand out above and beyond. So you'd obviously done voluntary work in the social chair, you'd obviously done paid retail work. And I think that's such an important thing to get across, that the more work experience or paid employment you can do, or putting your hand up, for example, with the social chair, it's just another string to your bow, and it just shows that you're committed and dedicated. You can keep a paid job down, you can be on time, then we'll be able to get a potential reference from that employer. So it's the more you can do to stand out and to set yourself apart, I think is really, really helpful. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, massively so. I think, first of all, I loved my job at Clark's. If I could have worked at Clark's the rest of my life, I would have. It was the best.
Did you get a discount on the shoes?
Yes, I did. No, I got one free pair a year.
A year.
But my proudest achievements are that you know when you have like the school rush and you've got like the ticketing system.
Oh yes, I remember that.
So I made the store's target by myself in one day.
Ooh.
And I also got the biggest bonus out of everybody, even though I was part time, because I'd done so many sales.
So you were a shoe selling machine.
Honestly, it was amazing. And also I still remember how to do the 5-point fit on your shoe. So if anyone ever has their shoe with a little rub on it, I can tell them exactly what's gone wrong. So yeah, I love that job. It was great. And then doing the kind of social chair work was really, it was super fun. I loved it at university. But I think what is really important is being able to show that you can spin lots of plates at the same time, roll up your sleeves to get whatever needs to be done, and also that putting your hand up is so important. Mm. I think if you want to be an EA or a PA, it's all about proactivity. You know, anyone can sit there and be told what to do and do it, but to be effective and to be valuable, what you need to start thinking is, okay, that person's asked me that, but what's the next thing they're going to ask me? So let me just get ahead. Or, mm-hmm. you know, I know they always like this thing done this way, so let me just do it for them before they even ask. And so if you can demonstrate those skills of being very on top of things, being very thoughtful about the way you work, I think that puts you in really good stead in super early on in your career.
Definitely. And just to mention LinkedIn at this point, you'll notice that before interviewing Sabinda, I've gone onto her LinkedIn and done some research. There would be so much more about, you know, on the company website. I'm sure there's a lot more about Sabinda online. So if you are going for an interview, for example, with someone like Sabinda, just doing a bit of research is so valuable. You also may have done work experience or paid employment at Clarks, and you could bond over that. But on the other side, what I wanted to touch on LinkedIn is how important it is to keep it updated, mm-hmm. even if you feel it's not necessarily valuable to what you want to do long term. Mm-hmm. Because just as I looked at Sabinda, if I sent Sabinda a shortlist, she would be looking at the candidates possibly mm-hmm. on LinkedIn. So having all those little things on there just helps build up a profile, and so that the person potentially interviewing you can see a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Needless to say, have a nice photo, a professional photo.
Yeah.
You'd be amazed how often sometimes that isn't the case. And I always just remember, just by someone receiving your CV, they then have your email, your phone number, and then from the phone number, they then have your WhatsApp. So then again, that's another photo. So it's just constantly thinking of all those different ways that someone is able to look at you and see what you've done, and just to always make sure, especially at the beginning of your job search, where you might not necessarily be in the employment mentality, what you're putting out there, you're comfortable a future employer seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Social media is something that is becoming obviously more and more popular, but something that I think we need to kind of manage and protect as much as we can.
Yeah, agree.
Working from home. So at Avonmore, they have a hybrid policy with 4 days office, 1 day home. Mm-hmm. That's obviously great that they've got both home working and office working. But what's your advice for someone wanting to manage that, especially when they're new to the organisation and possibly at the start of their career, to succeed in the best way possible?
Mm-hmm. So I think flexible working is important, but there's a limit. So when you're fairly new in your career, you get so much more from being in the office. You know, you learn from people just by sitting next to them. Those opportunities that we've talked about, they only come up if you hear, oh, you know, someone needs help with this project. If you're sat at home kind of waiting for things to come your way, you're never really going to progress. And mm-hmm. so that's why being in the office is super important. On the flip side, I think this kind of flexible hybrid working is, in my view, been a bit misconstrued. I think that companies should very much be set up for, it's no problem if someone needs to work at home tomorrow for a delivery, that's absolutely fine. And I think it's about creating that culture of, we want you in the office, but we want you to be in the office. But equally, if you need to be at home for something, that's absolutely fine. There's no kind of, you know, no one's thinking you're not doing anything. And that all comes down to culture and who you are as a team, mm-hmm. To create that environment.
And I think from a learning perspective, actually at any stage in your career, if you're not listening to mm-hmm. what else is going on, and if other people aren't listening to you,
yeah.
Your impressive conversations are not then heard by people more senior.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think just as it supports you, it allows you to have the development.
Mm-hmm.
And we are seeing candidates still really do want some sort of flexible working. That
yeah.
is considered a real plus. And companies that don't offer that, sometimes the candidate numbers we can present to them are lower.
Yeah.
But also we are seeing clients want people back in the office more than mm-hmm. they perhaps did previously. So it's an interesting balance, but I think businesses that offer some sort of hybrid or flexible yeah. working certainly seem to be on the right track, and, yeah. and that's what people want. So just to finish our conversation, Sabinda, which has been so useful, and I feel like we could have sat and talked for hours and covered a lot more topics, so I'm so grateful for all your advice. A lady at the start of this series started a bit of a trend for asking me a question, so mm-hmm. I feel like I have to give you the opportunity as well.
Yes, my question for you is, if you were to go back and start your career again, what is one thing that you would change?
Oh, interestingly. Well, I would definitely have worked harder at school, I must say, and university. I had a very good time, but perhaps I wasn't as focused. But the one thing I would do differently, so the first recruitment company I worked for, I was there for a couple of years and it was really small. And I left wanting a new opportunity, a new challenge. I probably thought the grass was greener. And I moved without having any internal discussions. Mm-hmm. So without speaking to my boss at the time and saying I had itchy feet or wanted to take on more. And I think, in hindsight, I think I would have actually had a more positive experience and possibly better opportunity mm-hmm. if I had had that conversation internally first. And I think people often shy away from that because it is a bit uncomfortable saying to your employer, I'm not sure I'm happy here. But actually, it gives the employer an opportunity to solve that for you. And it gives them, assuming that they feel that you are a talent they want to keep, the opportunity mm-hmm. for you then to be given a progression or mm-hmm. A promotion or something that could help advance your career. So I think don't be afraid to have those conversations. And also it's similar to asking for a pay rise. Mm-hmm. People often think, oh, I'll go and try and find a new job to get a pay rise. Mm-hmm. Whereas actually, I think if they asked internally for the pay rise first, they might have just as much luck securing that increase mm-hmm. in salary than looking elsewhere. But I do think that sometimes comes with age, that confidence. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think if I could go back and tell myself something, it would probably be that.
No, I agree, actually. My mum always says, if you've got something on your mind, just say it. And it's so true. You're so much more productive, actually, if you feel like you've had an honest conversation, because the company could either respond and that's great, and if they don't, that kind of gives you your answer.
Absolutely.
As well.
And then you feel like you've looked at all avenues mm-hmm. internally before moving, which is a risk, because yeah. when you're going somewhere new, you don't know what the culture necessarily exactly. is like, whereas at least where you're leaving, you know the pros mm-hmm. and the cons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think that's a good tip.
Well, Sabinda, thank you so much, and thank you everyone for listening. Thank you so much for listening to the Oriel Partners PA podcast. I hope you found this informative and inspiring. If you are looking for a new PA role or know of anyone else who might be, or are looking to hire, please do get in touch and we would love to help. The web address is aurelpartners.co.uk and our office number is 0207 101 9229.